couldn't find a film I wanted to inflict on you. I thought I was going to show The Great Escape, but having actually looked at it, I realized it was much ado about nothing. Sound and fury signifying nothing. And that we could make better use of our time by focusing on what is real. In this last period of time that we are in, before all hell breaks loose, in a literal sense, and while we have the margin for the supreme realization, that is why we have all come together, and that should be our constant focus at this point, without deviation or interruption or escapism into any kind of lesser focus. So I thought it would be useful to again come to recognize the subtlety of the supreme real, because the ego mind is unable to grasp that subtlety. It's unable to free itself from its subject-object duality, and it much prefers focusing on objects and desires for those objects and fears of other objects and creating narratives about its relationship and even treating itself as an object. And so the subtle consciousness that is present prior to any objectification or creation of narratives and paradigms and contexts and goals and striving and all of that that keeps the ego mind so busy losing itself, losing its true nature, has to be overcome by the constancy of eliminating that sanskara, of falling into that delusion. But noticing, even when the ego does fall into that delusion, that what you are is the awareness of that fall. You are not the one who has fallen. You remain always in that state that is always already liberated. And so it's very important not to buy into a narrative of, oh, I did it again, or I failed, or woe is me, because none of that is true of the self. I'm sure you all remember the grandfather of Advaita Vedanta, Gaudapada, the guru of the guru of Shankaracharya, whose most famous lines are, no one is in bondage and therefore no one ever gets liberated. This is to be taken very literally. No one is in bondage. The ego's bondage is an illusion because you're not the ego. No one is actually in the ego. It's a character being played out before you, but you're not in it. In the same way that when you wake up from a dream, you realize, oh, I wasn't in a dream. That wasn't reality. I was watching it. I was even creating it. But I was never actually in that situation. It never existed. It was fictional. It was an illusion, a self-created illusion. And because it's self-created, it is also self-destroying. And the mind is inherently self-liberating from its own creations. It creates, it sustains for a period, and then it destroys its belief, and it goes on to the next. But the self never changes from that pure awareness that's uninvolved, uncaptured, unaffected by whatever happens at the surface level of the mind. And no matter how bad one's nightmare might be or how bad one's karma might be, the self never loses that blissful nature of absolute freedom and absolute transcendence of the illusory unfoldment. So this truth is not simply present in Advaita Vedanta, it's present in Taoism, it's present in Buddhism, it's present in the apophatic, mystical Christian systems of thought, and it's present in Kabbalah, it's present in every spiritual tradition, the same truth. It's universal. I picked a line out of a book which is, I've read this from this before to you. It's probably the main root tantra of the Dzogchen, one of the main lineages of Dzogchen, which has been translated as the supreme source. So I want to read just part of one page to you that sums up this understanding, I think, in a very beautiful and a very clear and emphatic way. In case anyone has the book, it's on page 178. One's fundamental nature is pure and total consciousness. Okay? That is what you are. Pure, total consciousness. There's no unconscious. There's nothing out of range of consciousness. You never lose consciousness. Consciousness is eternal. Pure, total consciousness is your fundamental nature. And I, this is now the speaker of this book, which was downloaded by the great Buddha, the Supreme Source. I, the Supreme Source, the teacher of teachers, do not teach the teachers of the three dimensions to meditate in order to alter the mind. Okay? So Dzogchen, which is probably the pearl of the tantric Buddhist traditions, is teaching, do not meditate. It's a very bad habit. Meditation is your enemy. Why? Okay. Do not meditate in order to alter the mind, because the true nature of mind has always been self-liberation. Just like Gaudapada said, your fundamental nature is already liberated. Striving to meditate amounts to forsaking the true nature of mind. By trying to improve on it, you move away from it and enter into delusion. You lose the very thing that you're striving to gain. So listen, great being, Mahatma, if you want to realize the nature of your mind, which is possible only by not having desires, you must not intentionally seek to find the non-discursive state of equanimity. Okay? You can't strive for it because striving is the absence of equanimity. Any form of striving will take you away from the peace of that pure presence. Remain naturally without accepting or rejecting. In other words, don't accept or reject the state of consciousness that you are in. Remain spontaneously in the state free of commotion. The mind is precisely the natural condition, and all phenomena exist only in this very condition. Do not seek to alter it. Do not strive to attain something other than this nature. And as this is the very essence, do not seek anything else. Even if the Buddhas were to try, they would not find anything. As all is already perfect, there is no need to do anything. As all is already realized, there is no need to act. Simply remain in equanimity without judging or thinking. Listen, Mahatma, not even the Buddhas of the past found anything outside of their own minds. They never altered the natural condition. They never meditated, visualizing, or coming up with concepts. They were simply abiding in the non-discursive state in which they realized their own mind. The Buddhas of the present too, and those to come in the future, achieve self-realization only through this, the always already present non-discursive state of equanimity. Okay? So I don't think anything could be more clear than that. And your instruction is to do nothing. But of course, for the ego, to do nothing is impossible. However, because you're not the ego, it doesn't matter. As long as there is an awareness that is in the recognition that there is a silent presence underneath the commotion of the ego mental chatter and all of its emotional volatility, underneath that is the unmoving, unchanging equanimity that is the Buddha nature. Or that is, if you prefer, the Tao, or Shiva, or Shakti, whatever name you want to give it. It's nameless, formless, and unknowable by the mind that wants to make it an object that it achieves. It cannot be achieved. It is what you are, and that you can only know when there is no effort to achieve anything. So, this is agreed upon by all of the sages. Ramana says the same thing. All of the sages of the various traditions of non-duality are agreed upon this. It's not controversial. And this state is Sat. In fact, it's Sat Chit Ananda. This is the essence of consciousness, pure, total, absolute consciousness. And that is the source of everything that appears as if it's a self-standing world and filled with people, and you are one of those people and involved in activities and trying to get websites back up that have gone down and trying to achieve all kinds of goals in life. And none of it has any reality. Only this state of absolute equanimity is real. So why ever be disturbed? This is the state of perfection. Nothing more could be asked for. And there is no one who lacks this state as your fundamental nature. And whatever questions the ego has, why am I suffering like this? What did I do wrong? Why does God hate me? Why this? Why that? None of that has any relevance to this state, which is completely free of suffering and free of karma and free of cares about anything. And this carefree joy, this is the state we are meant to live in. We are designed by God to be in that state. Why have we forsaken who we really are? That's a rhetorical question, not one to be explored, because the truth is you haven't forsaken it. You've just come into the illusion that you've forsaken it. The conscious mind has forgotten it in order to play its part in this theodrama. But the theos of the theodrama is the one who must now remember that this is who you really are. And that is what brings the drama to a culmination of absolute beauty. Because this self-liberated consciousness is the only agency capable of transforming the world, of bringing an end to Kali Yuga and a new dream of a golden age, a kingdom of heaven, to manifest. No other power can do it. No other power can save us from the hell realm that is unfolding and the increasing daily genocides that we are probably too sickened to even want to read about anymore. And that world is only there to awaken us to the fact that we have created it because of our forgetfulness of who we are. And the simple act of remembering transforms it instantly. But only that, and only that can happen when there is no desire to improve things. This is the paradox. It improves when you realize your perfection, not when you try to make the other perfect, because there is no other. And so until this has been recognized and a new vibrational frequency takes over the morphogenic field, nothing can change in any beautiful way. Things will get more and more dark and more evil and more destructive. But as soon as this source of purity, goodness, joy, love, and power to recreate, power to withdraw this world from manifestation and manifest a new one, when you have attained that by realizing you are already that, that energy will be transmitted throughout the network of consciousnesses that compose the field, which is the grid upon which the world dream is anchored, and that dream will suddenly disappear and reappear in a new form. And this is the function of those who practice Sat Yoga. But you must be in that state of Sat, and then you are a Bodhisattva, and your energy of compassion and love that flows from this state has the power to effect transformation throughout the field of the dream. So this is our mission and our work, and no other focus has any value but this. Everything else entails suffering, and the suffering is only there to awaken you to the fact that you've forgotten who you are. But there's no happiness in this world anymore, and the only way happiness will return is by finding it in the source of your being. And that happiness is unconditional, and it is the mind of God itself. And so that blissful self will then open up its potencies, its cities, to recreate the new world, simply because that is the act of compassion that alone is being called for now by all the suffering beings in the world. They are calling us to remember who we are. Okay, that was my message for this evening. The floor is open if anyone has any comments or questions. Maybe you should go to the mic.
Thank you for this very subtle message. My question is related to that, I think. And I don't quite remember the exact words that you use. It's the teaching that we studied last night on paradox that explains that one opens the heart to connect to the soul level, then the soul level can be an adoration for the real self. And once that occurs, one has to... And this is the part I don't remember very well. One has to connect to samsara to actually integrate this real self energy that one has connected to, which you were talking, in this effortless state, to samsara, so that one can, I don't know if transform is the right word, but then can experience samsara as nirvana. There seems to be an act of containment or of being a I don't know what the word is, a catalyst or a channel to sort of, by one's realization of the real self, and then samsara, containing samsara. So I don't know if it's the energy of the real self that flows, and just it appears as nirvana. So that was kind of my question. I don't know if it's clear.
Well, all of that is a misunderstanding.
Okay.
So let me clarify that. First of all, none of that process takes place in time. The adoration that we're speaking of is the adoration of God, but it cannot be said that it is adoration for God or from God. It is adoration which is the essence of God, which is that state that we're just talking about. Pure and total consciousness is also a state of just total love, all right? In that state, there is neither nirvana nor samsara. So the illusion that one was in samsara disappears. And at the same time, the illusion that one is in some transcendent state beyond samsara disappears. Once you realize that samsara is nirvana, and nirvana is samsara, there is also an immediate, timeless realization, not something that happens in some linear succession, that there never was a samsara, because samsara was always nirvana. And so you can't really call it samsara if it's already nirvana. And nirvana is not really nirvana because it's samsara, right? So it is neither nor both. There is no way to describe it. And there isn't even an it, because all that is realized is the expression of consciousness itself. Not either a phenomenal field beyond that is projected, nor a subject that is aware of it. All of that duality disappears. And it disappears instantly in the moment of adoration itself, which is the moment of liberation. And it's the moment of the realization that this was your natural state that was always there, and no one was ever liberated. And there's not really any such thing as a soul. A soul doesn't actually exist in the same way that an ego doesn't really exist. We use these terms only in order to give the ego mind a kind of a sense of different vibrational frequencies. And we can say that the soul is a vehicle which has that inherent love of God, but it's nothing other than the mind and the light and the awareness of God that is, in a sense, functioning as like a ray of light from the central sun that then lights up a world. But the sun and the world and the rays are all the same beingness. There isn't actually any separation, because nothing ever was, nothing ever came into existence. It's only the mind of God, nothing else, the one self dreaming, but nothing outside of itself ever comes to be. Does that make it any clearer?
Even more subtle.
An
even more subtle answer. Requires reflection a little.
No, it doesn't. You can't reflect on this.
Well, being in it.
No. You can't reflect on it. This is really an important point.
Okay.
The more you try to reflect on it, the more you will create narratives of fantasies about it. Mm. Because the ego mind cannot understand this. It cannot. It's only when you realize it by being it that there will be a total understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But that total understanding can never be translated fully into words. Even though I try to language it in a way that is subtle and attempts to make it clear, it can never be totally clear until it is your own realization. And then it can't be shared, it can't be transmitted, not through art, music, philosophy, or any other form. All that can be really shared is the blissful taste of it, the samarasa, but the actual truth of it, because we're talking about the mind of God, is too subtle for anyone to be able to explain. Anyone who tries to do it, who is not in that state as the mind of God, is a fool. And if you're in that state, you won't even try. You will just accept that this is what is the real, and there is no one else to explain it to. There are no others. There's no multiplicity. So even though we try to offer some kind of a philosophical explanation to satisfy the ego mind, it actually has very little to do with the real itself. Okay? So reflection is not the way. It is simply being that presence.
Thank you.
You wanna?
Thank you, Shinya. Thank you for that teaching tonight. It was the perfect medicine, a real potent potion of love. Thank you.
I'm glad. You've earned some medicine.
Yeah, I could use it. Thank you. It's funny, you know, when you said the only agency that can bring about Satyuga, or you were talking in that sense, I heard agency as a collective. I heard agency in the sense of like an ad agency or something like that, right? That sense of a collective, and it's now made me reflect on, and because of today, and because of that feeling of having to kind of work in a team to try and solve a problem, which is no problem, but that sense of a talent bank, like the sense that this motley crew of beings, right, all have incredible, miraculous capacities that are totally different to this, to my capacities, right? And that coming together creates these miraculous possibilities. My question is really, what is a sangha? How does it work? What's its technical function? And how do we bring together this total aloneness of this process together with the fact that we're here? And bringing about a collective realization of the self together as well.
Well, that's a very subtle question. Because a sangha in the real sense would be a collection of beings who are gathered together for a single reason and focus, which is to vibrate at that frequency of God consciousness in which our intelligence is maximized and our ego is minimized, and we are able to work together as a team and cooperate and be in harmony without any kind of envy or struggle of power or whatever else egos tend to do. And with very high morale, because all are focusing on the blissful nature of being and radiating and and transmitting that as our real seva. And so the Sangha is the ongoing maximization of that energy field of pure and total consciousness. And then in that, whatever arises of karmic nature in the phenomenal field, it can be dealt with without it creating any problems, any anger or frustration or any of that, because we simply take it in our stride that everything that occurs is a blessing and is awakening us ever more to that need to function as the team that is in the paradox of unity and multiplicity. And to be able to offer one another all of our own very special insights and abilities and talents and good karma that can make up for deficits that are in other parts of the Sangha, until there is a complete distribution of that equanimity and that joy and that beauty and that power of clear thinking and the ability to receive inspiration and download, but also to be in a state of total patience and acceptance without any kind of an ego worry about anything, because we know that it's all the will of God. Nothing happens that isn't God's will, and God's will is always to bring about blessings. And so it's simply a matter of being patient until the hidden blessing emerges. And it will always come in the form of our growth, our maturity, the deepening of our faith and of our trust and our appreciation for one another and for the source that is sustaining and transforming all that is unfolding, and for always remaining in that state in which we can be of service to the other and uplift and inspire and bring the joy of the recognition that all of this is a dream, and that our focus should be on the dreamer and bringing the power of the dreamer fully into the dream and not being trapped in the minutiae of the dreaming creatures, but see the largest picture of the one who is picturing all of us, manifesting all of us as aspects of that divine nature. And by doing that, everything gets solved and resolved in the moment it's supposed to, and no feathers ever get ruffled, and all remains in that state of equanimity. And then we have proven that we are a true Sangha.
Haji.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Please.
Thank you for this class today. It was very insightful, very helpful. Something that keeps coming up is I'm having resistance to is you mentioned stop striving, and I see myself. I see like as my I know it's an egoic reaction, striving for what I'm doing and some activity, playing music or cooking, or there's always this striving, even taking a walk, I need a... And so how do I change that around? Because I feel like that it's to a more, I don't know, open state that's
no judgment. Don't try to change it, because then you'd be striving again. It's the nature of the ego to strive. Okay?
Okay.
It's the nature of the self not to do anything and to recognize it's already perfect and there's nothing to strive for. Okay? So realize that you exist at both levels. You are the striving ego, but you're also the real self that is God and has no need to strive for anything. And if you wish to add that you're also the soul that is recognizing and adoring God and wanting your striving to ultimately be the striving to realize God rather than striving for something else, then you can be aware of all of those things happening at the different levels. But the only level that's real is the level that is always already perfect and never changes and never strives and never lacks anything and is always in bliss. That's what's real. And the more that you are in that state, the more the striving at the ego level will be successful and it will bring joy rather than a sense of frustration and I'm not good enough and I got to keep... No, everything will be done out of love and out of joy and out of service to the real self that is already in the state of perfection, and it will become a reflection and a perfect mirror of that state of the real self. And then you will discover that what you are meant to be as an ego is an avatar of that non-striving self. But to bring the beauty of that self into the world through the results of all the striving that you have already done. And to have that striving culminate in the joy of sharing your happiness with all. Okay?
Okay. Okay, now that you say that, well, how to separate if I'm striving and then I want to try to be out of the striving state?
The I thought is striving. The I is not striving. Okay? The real self doesn't strive. Mm-hmm. Striving happens only at the level of thought. It's a narrative. Okay. I've got to get better at this or that. That's all it is a narrative that's part of the operating system of the body. The real self doesn't strive and is always just blissfully watching the whole thing without any disturbance whatsoever. The more that you realize that is what you are, the more that the ego striving becomes a beautiful act of love and service and joy rather than some frustrating, not good enough feeling that haunts you and makes you want to mm-hmm. do things in a better way, right? So all of that suffering, it can be gone and the ego can live in joy once it has been divinized through the realization that that is what you really are. Mm. And then all the narratives change and they magically become ways of manifesting and sharing beauty and truth and love and bliss to all beings unconditionally because you're in that state overflowing with love and with the nectar of immortality to share with all because you realize you are the immortal self. Mm-hmm. That's the realization you want to focus on.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you, Shunya. I also found that to be a helpful guided meditation and the teaching. You started the guided meditation, I think, with something like just go into the natural state of the mind, right? And don't accept or reject. Don't, you know, I think ultimately my question is maybe about relaxation and what really is that? And you know, because you're saying with the state, right, where there's nothing to do. And, you know, and I feel like life is such a commotion between all these things to do and wanting to cross them off the list so I have nothing to do, but doing things so I can escape not having any, you know. I don't know, and there's this lack of subtlety because there's so much focus on, I don't know, I feel that.
Well, you're describing the ego in general. It's not simply your ego, so don't be too personally concerned about this. The ego today oscillates between the rajasic state and the tamasic state. And it's not happy when it doesn't have anything to do, then it feels out of sorts, you know. And most egos hate Sundays because there isn't enough to do, and they hate the other days because there's too much to do, you know. So they're never going to be happy. They want structure and they hate structure. And they're always running away from their unhappiness and creating more unhappiness. So the ego is just on this, you know, gerbil wheel of self-defeat and self-sabotage. That's the game that the ego plays, okay? Don't try to change it even. You know, you can watch it with humor, okay? But there's a third guna, the sattva guna. And if you're in the sattva guna, you will be able to change what happens without doing anything. The sattva guna will suddenly calm down the ego, and it naturally brings relaxation. And it brings a state in which there is a desire to go inward. There's a natural yearning to feel what's it like when there's no commotion, which usually you feel only in deep sleep, and then you're not there to feel it. If you don't get enough deep sleep, you wake up the next day and you're a wreck because you didn't sleep or you had bad dreams instead of deep sleep. And so the more that you're in the sattvic state while awake, the more that you'll have a very peaceful and restful sleep, and then that creates a virtuous cycle. Every day there will be greater regulation and less dysregulation that the ego is usually in, because it's always striving too much, or it's spacing out and not doing anything too much, and then it falls behind, and then it has to catch up with itself, etc., etc. So this whole game can be observed and will be changed by the sattvic guna. And when you're in the sattvic guna enough, you want to be in the state of the kumbhaka. You want to be in the state where your breathing is very slow and the space between breaths is increased and there's a space between thoughts, and you want that to increase so you actually feel peace of mind and presence without the burden of having to think something and figure something out and achieve something. And that gives you a space to renew your energy, your life energy, and the prana begins to be received from the shakti that is flowing, that you can finally perceive. And when you perceive it clear enough, long enough, the sattva becomes sat. You realize that the one who is observing it is not the ego at all. And it becomes soul-level observation. And then even that soul level just is absorbed totally into the absolute real. And then from there on, nothing happens, and whatever seems to be going on in the world doesn't disturb you, because you are the ocean of consciousness in which your ego is just a wave, but it has no separate objective existence. And the consciousness of the ocean itself is what you are. And the consciousness of the ocean becomes more and more waveless, more calm and peaceful, and then life just becomes very easy and smooth and mirrors the presence of the infinite light and is filled with that light and bliss and nothing else. So that's the way that all of this will unfold. But don't be concerned with the ego trying to become better. This self-improvement game is the game that creates more suffering than any other. Stop striving and realize that perfect self. And then everything will happen spontaneously that is supposed to happen. That is the will of God, who you will discover is your own self.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And the question I have is, you've already answered it, but I feel like I want to try to put into words the feeling of the depth of the attachment of the mind to the striving. I don't know if I can even try to put it into words, but it feels like there's such an attachment to the need to like prove oneself, that there hasn't been able to be that space that you were just speaking about, where there's like allowing the sat to come first, and then whatever it is the ego thinks that it wants will just emerge naturally. It's almost like the drive to prove itself is so strong that it can't actually do the one thing that will allow it to actually prove mm-hmm. itself. And
yeah.
It's very self-defeating and very frustrating. I feel mm-hmm. like I find myself both observing the futility of the ego's process and still identifying with it and losing myself in the emotion of it and getting completely frustrated and emotionally and physically exhausted. And so then there's no barrier and there ends up being like a melting down or a falling apart, losing one's self in that narrative.
Yeah. No, I think that's an excellent description of the psychological condition of every ego. It's not simply mm-hmm. your ego. Most egos are attached to having to prove themselves constantly. And to who, right? You'll never be able to do it because you got to keep proving yourself. And, you know, this is what you did yesterday, but what are you going to do tomorrow, right? It's a never-ending cycle. And the person you want to prove it to ultimately is to yourself, but you don't know who you are. And you're not even sure what you want to prove, really. So once you recognize that this is inherent to the ego's nature as a being without essence, the reason it wants to prove itself is that it doesn't really exist. It lacks being. It lacks essence. And so it's trying to get that to prove to itself that it's worthy and it's real and it's good and all of that. But it doesn't really exist except as a construct in your own mind. It has no reality outside of your own belief system. And so it's a fantasy that will never actually be able to be fulfilled because it's self-perpetuating. But if you can observe this from a place of non-identification, not observing it through the ego and thinking, oh, I'm doing it again and this is my burden and I'm trapped in this. No, don't think about it. You have to be able to observe without thought, but simply as presence. That's the key. When you realize that what you are is presence, not thought. Thought is an object. Thought occurs to you, but you do not think. Thought happens, and the body's actions happen in accord with those thoughts. But what you are is presence to that, pure awareness. That's what was meant by this Dzogchen teaching, pure and total presence, consciousness as presence, not as thought. And when you're in that state of presence, then there's suddenly a distance between you and the ego that you're present to. And you can see yourself as an other. And then finally you can laugh at that other and recognize that, oh, he's really trapped in a problem, but, you know, he can't solve it. But presence itself is the solution. And if you'll just remain in that presence, you will discover that in that state you begin to relax. And then the presence itself is able to change what is happening in the ego. The ego gets affected by the deeper vibrations of that presence that is coming from the natural state that's always in equanimity. And once you're in touch with that essence of your being that really does have reality, it's not a fantasy structure. It is real, but it is not articulable. But it's a state of presence that has the feeling of peace and joy, and that gets communicated to the ego. The ego changes from the depths within. It doesn't change from its mental activity or anything it does with the body. It can only change through that awareness in which it recognizes that it is an object in its own consciousness. And its consciousness extends way beyond the ego. That's just a tiny little vibrational commotion in an ocean of peace. And then that little vibrational eddy of thoughts begins to calm down, and it becomes absorbed in the presence of the oceanic self, and then everything changes forever.
Thank you. I'll leave it there.
Silence is the only hope. Questions and reflections don't actually help. Was this useful to people? Yes? Okay, well, I'm glad. But I also know that it's too subtle for the ego to hold on to, right? So what was said will be forgotten and it'll be misunderstood, and you'll try to turn it into some philosophy or some, you know, plan of striving again, you know, I'm going to realize this and I'm going to master it, you know, and it's just exactly that has to be watched with humor and not fallen into, because your natural state really is already liberated and doesn't suffer, okay? But your mind will never know who you are. And it's only when you have recognized that the mind is a hopelessly inadequate instrument for self-realization that finally you will adopt pure presence as your mode of being. And in that mode of being, no more problems exist. They don't arise anymore. And everything that happens is just dealt with in stride without emotional reactivity. And there's no identification with the character that is being played in the dream. And everything is seen with great joy and love and the adoration of the intelligence and goodness and beauty of God that is present in every moment, regardless of the kind of problems that seem to be intractable and are creating suffering. None of that is real. What is real is this underlying presence that is always peaceful. And this peace, once you have recognized it as the truth of who you are, then permeates all the other levels of being. And then the journey is complete. So may you recognize without striving what is the absolute goal, which is simply to remember what you already always are. Blessings. Namaste.